because I do believe realtors that really want more, that don't want to continue chasing, they can build their own pipeline where they know that these listings are coming their way. I think it's just the access, and I think it's just like really someone breaking it down. I just would love to see others come up and putting their vision out there.
Welcome back to the Business of Homes podcast. My name is Michael Conrad, and each week I get to share amazing stories of folks in the mid-state here who are doing really cool stuff around real estate and business and development and all the little things that touch homes. And so my hope is that we together on this journey are figuring out better ways to do business. We're learning interesting ways to interact with the home and overall getting a little bit better every day. Today I'm joined by Josephine Saffert, who not only works in the same building as me, but is this incredible multi-skilled, multi-talented individual that I feel like every time we pass in the halls, we pass a few words between us, I'm learning something. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Josephine, you are probably one of the first people that I've met that has kind of grounded this idea of development for me. Because development, as we intersect it with homes and with real estate and with building, it kind of gets this outsized, large, even giant concept of like, I'm an earth mover. I'm raising houses out of the ground. I'm a developer. And so I think my experience in the grander world of construction real estate, I'm typically interacting with developers who are doing large scale development. I think that's pretty common. But the truth is, there's a lot of boutique, smaller development shops that are popping up, infill and small developments all around the mid-state region, and you're one of them. And so I want you to help me tease out, not only for our listeners, but really for me, this idea of like, what is a small development shop as opposed to, say, Dries Homes or something, one of those big guys? Mm-hmm.
I think in the development world, you probably want to define small because I just had this conversation earlier this morning with one of my mentors. And, you know, you could have a development shop of five people or three people managing $500 million of real estate.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, define small in the terms of like, you know, people, you know, or really asset-based. And I think people underestimate what, you know, a few great people can do.
Amazing. Okay, so back up here, because you're right. We're talking about two totally different things. Number of people to leverage their time, knowledge, systems to build a house, 2, 10, 100. And then we're talking about small, big versus how much assets under development are we building, say, in a year's time. And so I guess in my mind, when I'm thinking of developers, I'm thinking of these big national builders that are dropping, you know, homes in the hundreds and thousands, you know, into a geographic region. But obviously price is a mitigating factor here. Where does it intersect with you? What's your story?
I own Sapphire Development Group, and we're really focused on urban infill. So 10 to 15 minutes around Broadway, Nashville. Nashville's push for urban development, I think, really started more so on the residential end. And then it started filling in more on the commercial, right? Because like ultimately you need the traffic to promote more commercial development. So, you know, it's sort of a domino effect, I think, right? And so I think for, you know, me and Sapphire, you know, we started on the residential end, and now we're trying to get into larger and larger projects, right? Because we've really understood well the residential side. And now, you know, I'm super interested in developing really multifamily, like also vertical, right? Not just townhomes or like luxury products. So, you know, I think Nashville is such an adult playground where, you know, you can really put your mind to something and then make it happen. And so I think for a young developer here, the opportunity is still very endless.
So let's back up, because you are so experienced in this that I am like having trouble keeping up, because when we talk about a development shop, we're not just talking about a real estate professional that is taking an existing structure, changing it, improving it, and putting it back on the market. We sort of term that flipping, I suppose, in a lot of ways. And we're not even necessarily talking about simply just taking an empty piece of land that has maybe accidentally remained empty in an urban environment and building a house on it. I suppose maybe that's the most basic rudimentary form of development. But there is this inherent idea, in my mind at least, in a developer, that they have a vision and that they're looking at the larger social fabric and saying, okay, well, what's the highest and best use of the land, not just in this one parcel, but maybe I need to start adding connected parcels, or I don't need to see this street as merely a strip of old houses that can individually be renovated or rebuilt upon, but maybe this could become something else, or this is now a corridor for commercial traffic, so it maybe is better used. So a developer is someone who is looking at the larger sort of urban planning, but is also looking at highest and best use, in this case, of course, in residential, but also coming up with creative solutions. Let's not just put a box there. Let's come up with something that is visually interesting. Let's come up with something that's functionally interesting, or maybe at least just interesting to a certain subset of people that we want to attract for another reason. And so, I mean, I love thinking about this and talking about this, but it all feels really beyond what the regular real estate professional is able to do. It. Yet you make it sound like it's really easy, but I know a lot of people, myself included, in real estate that have a lot of experience, thousands of transactions, but like, man, coming up with all of those different factors, holding them in tension, and then like, where do you get the money? Who do you get to do the building work? Like, who are you selling it to? There's so many connected pieces. It's way different than just advocating and representing buyers or advocating and representing sellers or conveying real estate from one party to another. So how did you begin to wrap your mind around it? Did you come from real estate and get in development, or did you come from somewhere else and get in development and have kind of backed into real estate?
I like what you said earlier too. You know, I mean, a developer is someone that has a vision. I think that's really where it starts. Someone that really understands like urban planning at its core and what people want. At the end of the day, it's a people business backed by numbers, right? And so the backing by numbers, that's where I come from.
Okay.
So I have a finance background. And so I'm from Germany. Family still lives over there. But I've traveled a whole lot. I lived partially in China, you know, Europe and New York City. I came back to Nashville. So all of that to say that I think I needed that journey to understand like urban planning better, having just like seen, you know, various forms of how people like to live, right? And how areas like grow. And I've seen some areas, you know, in my life that have a lot of growth, right? Like, I mean, New York, living in New York City is a whole nother beast. And living, you know, in Beijing was a whole nother experience.
Density and on another level.
Right. Talk about density, right? Yeah. But you need the density if you want any kind of affordability. So so my background really primarily is from finance. But, you know, I graduated in 2016. With a finance and international management degree, and then ended up moving to New York and, you know, joined a tech startup. I full-time networked the private equity, venture capital, and angel investor side there, and really quickly understood and learned that process of kind of connecting all the different variables and puzzle pieces together and build basically something viable, right? And so I was in a green card process, and at the end of the day, I needed, you know, something also that materialized much faster, like really building a business faster. That was sort of like what I had to solve when I started. And so in 2017, I had that opportunity to move back to Nashville, and that was, you know, a time when the market was just so ripe here. It was absolutely apparent, I think, to even maybe the last ones that Nashville real estate market was going to take off, right? I think I always like to reference sort of the 2014 generation of developers, because, you know, they had, you know, an opportunity to get to land at like, I don't know, $30,000-$40,000 a pad, or, you know.
Yeah.
And so when I came in, we were like more so at like 60. I remember closing on a four build, well, land for four unit development, and that was $250,000. So $62,000 per pad, you know, and now today we're easily twice that. If not.
Any listeners here, you can just quietly raise your hand wherever you are if you remember what it was like to get a per pad below six figures. Man,
Those are the good old days.
So when anybody asks me, is now a good time to buy? I like to smile and say, well, you know where Nashville is going. So, I think, you know.
It's better than tomorrow, right? Today is always better than tomorrow.
I would say so. Yeah. So, you know, I really started by essentially, in a way, not stumbling, but it was very intentionally, you know, coming back to Nashville and building this real estate business. But we started at the time with fix and flips, right? Mm-hmm. So we bought auction properties and bank owned properties and quickly scale from there. But I did grow up with real estate. So you mentioned earlier, kind of like, you know, what was my background? I understood real estate because I grew up with my father in showrooms and interior design. And so to me, you know, the points that you brought up earlier, you know, how do you connect sort of the vision with, you know, urban planning, with capital, with like design? Like for me, it's been sort of a full circle type journey, right? I grew up with design, and through my father's kind of entrepreneurial journey, I really wanted to understand the capital side and own that. And I didn't want to be dependent on anybody else for that. And so I mastered that for me, like, of, you know, what I wanted to do. So, you know, then from 13 to 18, worked in an architecture shop, you know, kind of learning a little bit more on the German end, the multifamily, and really thought I was going to be an investment banker until immigration pulled me in. Okay, you know, we're doing this now. And then really by trial and error, figuring it out. So it all just was really connected at a very young age. So I started when I was 24, 25. So
it's so interesting because I've met a lot of architects and designers, interior designers, capable real estate professionals with vision, I would argue, who are not developers. I myself would be, I would probably call myself fairly speculative. Certainly I come from the built environment, the construction background enough to know how to drive costs down on that side of the formula. But a sticky part of this grander, sort of constants and variables is money. It's so interesting. I've met folks of all walks of life who've said coming to money and allowing that to fuel projects is easy for them. And I've met just as many, myself included, who are thinking that's just as like a mountain that can never be climbed. So this finance background and understanding like how to bring capital in and have it work for you and not even your own capital. I mean, to be clear for listeners here, you are not leveraging necessarily your own capital. That may be part of it, but you're using outside capital, correct?
I started by raising capital from the very start.
And is that something that as you level up into different stages of development that you have to sort of go back to that well and look for, you know, capital to work with?
Yeah, I think, you know, learning how to raise capital, I think is instrumental to creating any kind of scalable business. That's just my point of view. I mean, I think, of course, you know, you have great product businesses where you sell product, you generate revenue, you reinvest. But I think, you know, I think in real estate, a lot of things are backwards, right? If you think about a general real estate agent delivers all the service in the hopes that they get paid eventually. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you have to deliver the service for, you know, a month at least, a lot of times if it's not a cash buyer. And then you get paid 4 to 6 weeks, 8 weeks later. And so I think like in real estate development and real estate, you know, it is beneficial when you're able to raise capital and, you know, are able to access sort of that scalability up front. If you start with your own capital, then you're always going to be limited because, I mean, unless you have infinite funds available, right, you have a ceiling. So I think with, you know, being able to raise capital, you're just a lot better positioned to create really a viable business.
So this is for anyone listening mm-hmm. who is familiar with the tech industry or Silicon mm-hmm. Valley, you know, rounds of capital raising and letting that fuel growth before there is ever adoption or sale, you know, is a common side of the world. But there's a lot of us in the grander sort of umbrella of real estate and construction, the residential and commercial environment that either went by way of sort of a profit-centric model or maybe a bootstrap model or whatever, or actually, honestly, a lot of real estate professionals aren't having to spend or make a lot of money in the beginning. It's sort of a very slow, organic process. And so this is, in fairness, unfamiliar to some relatively large subset of real estate professionals, this idea of like, well, let's raise a bunch of money. And then our conversation isn't about like profitability so much as is it burn rate, you know? And so how much of that is this squeeze that, you know, you hear about hard money lenders that, you know, have these really high rates, you know, for borrowing. And so do you ever feel like you're squeezed on those capital calls, you know, on the front side, or is that something that you just learn to live with?
No. So I think I do want to clarify a few things. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you only raise capital successfully if you can show profitability, right? So we always, I mean, we make sure we have a lot of protection and buffers there to our profitability. And I would like to avoid ever making a capital call. So I, you know, in general, you've got to put a deal together where you can show strong profitability. And I would not suggest raising any capital if you don't feel like you have the knowledge. I know Katie Morrell talked about that as well. You know, you really want to have the knowledge to back it up that you can deliver on what you said you're going to do. And so we raise more like on a deal-to-deal basis, right? So when you compare the tech startup world, Silicon Valley, with the real estate, like here in Nashville, it, you know, it is very different raising venture cap, like venture funds.
Yeah, to back versus your company versus a deal.
Correct. Yeah. So ours is deal based. And so that has layers of protections as well, right? So when a deal goes well, then, you know, obviously you hope that the investor would want to move on to the next project, which a lot of times they do. But it's all deal for deal.
Do you feel like you are ever fighting a rolling clock on that? Because there obviously is a culmination of a final product that's finished. And then there's a sort of an intermediary period that you can't fully control about how fast something sells. And so, you know, the deal timelines that you put together based on the money that you're raising, you know, make some protected assumptions, I'm guessing. But is that clock fighting you ever? You feel?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I usually even have my deal structured to that. If I perform in the timeline that I think I can perform in, that, I mean, I basically get a promote versus like if it takes me longer, that it favors the investor. I always like to, you know, structure any kind of deal very much incentive focused, because same on the builder's end, right? Because at the end of the day, everybody's got to be incentivized to play their part. And, you know, I know a lot of times with entrepreneurship, you know, people get into entrepreneurship thinking that they don't have a job or there's no boss or, you know, and at the end of the day, I mean, you know, we have investors and of course we have fiduciary responsibilities to deliver. And it's just another form. Yes, I have a lot more freedom. You know, I don't have a ceiling to my compensation and all that. But at the end of the day, I still have, you know, someone that I need to report to. And so, yes, I, you know, when I set up my deals, I want to make sure that the timelines are realistic and that I don't over like promise. Right. And sometimes it's difficult. I mean, real estate, as you said, there's so many different variables that have to play together. But I think that's where it comes down to building the right team, surrounding yourself with the right people that can deliver.
Okay. So development becomes really more about being able to properly structure a deal, build a formula, properly forecast, put together a great team, and being able to know where to look for the opportunities. And so when you break it down like that, it doesn't seem so hard. That's lovely. And yet there's, you know, a lot of people, again, myself included, that aren't going out and immediately starting and doing this tomorrow because there does feel like there's this this sort of barrier in there. So I guess maybe the question I'm having is, why aren't more real estate professionals going into development? Because this does feel like a natural progression, at least the way that you have so eloquently put it. Because if you know real estate and you know neighborhoods and you know comparative market analysis and you have been a participant in conveying property from one person to another and you know what buyers and sellers want and you've had conversations with financiers we call banks, then you've played with all the blocks in the toy box, but you haven't stacked them up to be the developer. And so why is it, as you have in your view of it, why is it that more real estate agents aren't naturally becoming developers?
I'm glad you asked. Because I think it's the access to knowledge, and generally, like, developers don't really share what they know and how to get into. I don't like to come from a fear-mindedness. So I started Developer Academy, where I basically share everything that I know, because I do believe that actually, you know, realtors that really want more, that don't want to continue chasing clients or even wholesalers, you know, not continuing to chase contracts, that they can build their own pipeline where they know that these listings are coming their way. So they're able to create a supernormal vehicle of overall income and revenue, right? So I think it's just the access. And I think it's just like really someone kind of like breaking it down. You know, I had to learn everything by trial and error, but at the end of the day, I found great people locally and, like, you know, and nationally that have, you know, helped me understand what I needed to know to get to where I'm at today. And I do believe in giving back. I've always been very, very open in terms of, like, coaching, mentorship, and trying to help also other women come up. And we need more women in development. And I think it's also something that, unfortunately, and I say unfortunately because I wish it wasn't that way, but I think a lot of times women have to see that someone else has done it that kind of really maybe looks like them. Men just go for it, which, you know, I just would love to see, you know, others come up and putting their vision out there.
Yeah, there's a confidence piece I think you're talking about here for all parties, but, you know, particularly women in the way you term it, is that without that knowledge, it takes a certain amount of a leap, and that can be hard, you know, and it you're right. As I think about it, I'm thinking about all the influencing people out there in the world, famous and otherwise, on Instagram or whatever. Like, who are these developers that are breaking the information down and commoditizing it for us regular people? And I'm struggling to come up with one off the top of my mind, because it's just not a subject that I see a lot. You know, the TV and these channels have given us a lot of access and insider sort of information into the world of real estate or repair, but not development. It appears to be just a level above in complication that's maybe hard to present or hard to discuss, or maybe it's hard to speak about it nationally. You know, and our world feels like a much more national conversation. You know, the people who are doing business, say, in real estate in New York and in California, they're still talking to the real estate agents in Omaha, Nebraska, and in Nashville, Tennessee, and vice versa, because there's a certain universality, at least in the conversation, even if it's not totally universal in practice. But in development, different market dynamics, the speed, the demand, the integration, or even like the city fabric or the state rules and regs, you know, these are all really different. And so I'm assuming development does really tend to look pretty different in New York City than it does Omaha, Nebraska, or Nashville, Tennessee. And so, yeah, I like that you're building this access to information. You said it was called Developer Academy. Okay, well, we will put that information in the show notes for any listeners here that want to get more information on that, or maybe learn from themselves what that looks like. But what is one of those little nuggets you can give me right now? Something you had to struggle through learning that now you're turning into a lesson to be taught to others?
So there's so many lessons that I've learned the hard way over the years. I mean, you know, I've gotten burned by builders. And so I, you know, educate and coach on just like how to set up like those agreements like differently, how to manage, you know, also that process. But also like partnerships, right? I mean, at the end of the day, pretty burnt by that. Unfortunately, it broke off from my former business partner, like pretty much lost everything in 2020 and really, really restarted. So I've done it now twice from scratch. And to your earlier question, actually on like the capital side, you know, the ability to raise capital is what also had me do it all over again very quickly. Because the skill set that I've learned over the years, and I realized this actually just more over the last few years, is so valuable that it's a multi-million dollar skill that nobody can ever take away from you. So no matter what happens, you can always put it back together. I'm just like saying that it's something that, you know, in general, like it's something that gives you a lot of like security that you actually don't find really a lot in other jobs or, you know, occupations. Right. And so I think also being a developer, I mean, you've got to have somewhat of a strong stomach because at the end of the day, it's not for the faint-hearted.
Yeah.
But knowing that, you know, you've always got yourself to figure it out. You've always figured it out before and you can leverage your skill set, I think is actually like really unique. And I've always loved that about real estate development.
Hey everyone, it's Jake, director for the Business of Homes podcast. I hope you've been enjoying today's episode, starting with Sapphire Development Group's transition from residential to commercial development, how Josephine's financial background played into her development success, and why development education is so hard to find. When we return, Michael and Josephine dive into building a business to reach its full potential, the visibility of developers, and how understanding urban development can help your real estate career. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Business of Homes Pod, where you can interact with us and see some great bite-sized pieces from all of our episodes. For you listeners out there, did you know our entire podcast are filmed and are on our YouTube channel? Check it out next time you want to see our amazing guests tell their stories. And are you currently watching this episode in video format? Don't forget to follow us on your preferred audio streaming service to take us with you on the go. Lastly, do you have any feedback or want to suggest someone for the show? Email us at thebusinessofhomespodcast@gmail.com. Please enjoy the rest of today's episode with Josephine. Let's get back to it.
As you grow and you build a business around yourself, and this is not, you know, uncommon to any part and piece of real estate or construction. If you grow a company and you build systems and structure and employees, you're going to get to a point where it's harder to completely stop and start again than it is to continue. And all of a sudden, your risk tolerance changes because the profit that you have made or the lifestyle changes that you've made, or even just like the fate of others that are now in your hands, to lose your current structure down to nothing, to crumble it down to nothing and then restart is really scary, really difficult, sometimes feels impossible, and might even financially be such a long road that it might not even be possible to do it organically. Mm-hmm. But as you said, if you are building this idea of understanding how to bring capital in at the right moments, then you can scale so much quicker because money fuels talent and money and talent fuel structure. And so this, for anyone listening, this is a really interesting concept that if you can learn this skill of how to bring the right money to the right situation or structure, then you have a security and a sustainability. I'm not going to say that's better than like the experience and structure that you built, but it's a incredibly helpful skill that almost helps you avoid a total loss that you can't come back from.
So I will say this, that, you know, in my former business partnership, I mean, I had to go through of how things can go very south and how you bounce back from it. And at the end of the day, I think it stands and falls with you that, you know, I want to make sure I do what's right. And that at the end of the day, that, you know, what I said I would do that I do. Hmm. And so I don't take this lightly as in like managing retirement funds or, you know, self-directed IRAs and really, you know, funds of high net worth individuals that, you know, either inherited the money, have obviously like earned well and like saved up. At the end of the day, like, it's a lot of responsibility. And I don't take this lightly. So I think there's a business component and then there's really like the investor relations component and there, you know, that management, like asset management in a way, right? So the responsibility piece is on the business end and then on the investor side. And a lot of times that's two different, I think, buckets, if you will, right? Because you have employees here and you have sort of that responsibility and then you have the investor side over here. And so, I think as you raise capital, you want to make sure that you do that sustainably. So, I mean, I want to be around in 10, 20 years, right? So I don't want to scale too quickly either. So I want to clarify that. It's just more so the skill set in itself that's really powerful, I think, and that differentiates. And to the point of, like, you know, what I've seen over the years too is, you know, yes, lifestyle may increase for a lot of developers because, you know, cash comes fairly quick and maybe in some ways easy. But I'm a minimalist. So for me, I'm really more obsessed with actually, like, figuring out, like, how, what it takes to build a business where you can really unfold your full potential. So I think, you know, people do it for different reasons. People develop for different reasons. So for me personally, what really drives me there is really more so, like, that obsession with, like, full potential and where can I push this to, right? Like, what can I build? In regards to the skill of raising capital, you know, so I'm coming from a German culture where, in general, like, it's not really common to ask people for money. So just for people to understand, like, sort of my journey, I really started from, like, not even feeling comfortable at all to talk really about money and nor, like, ask for money. Just when I, you know, was recruited as a college athlete here and had to start going out and fundraising for, like, you know, the team and you know, good causes and whatnot. That's actually, you know, so that was the first spark of even understanding, oh, hey, what? Like, here in the US, you can actually fundraise and, like, you know, friends and family are, you know, funding, you know, I don't know, these things. And like, that's not the culture where I'm coming from. And so for me, so that was the first, like, kind of spark of just getting more comfortable with, like, okay, you know, these are more like nonprofit efforts, right? And then going to New York and seeing sort of that true, like, startup culture, you know, from Microsoft, Google, and all the brunch work she works and whatnot, and seeing those pitches and putting that together with that business aspect, it was just really powerful. And then getting really comfortable with, you know, figuring out what is the minimal viable product, and then how do you connect that value proposition with what investors are looking for.
Yeah.
So it was really an absolute journey. And then later I translated that to real estate, right? So I started really from absolutely, like, no understanding of raising capital. So I think here in the US, a lot of people have a leg up because they've, you know, fundraised for college activities or kids activities or whatever it is. And so that's not necessarily common. I mean, we don't even have a wedding registry in German culture, really, you know, like, I mean, we don't really ask for anything like that. So just to give perspective.
No, and it's an interesting perspective because I think you're right. I think we do have a more common understanding of plying friendships and family for kind of that small fundraising ask. It does get dicier when you start to ask strangers for money for business. That feels a lot bigger stakes. So yeah, that's interesting.
But I will say, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you're doing them a favor too, right? Because,
right?
I mean, capital is more commodity than what people think. And at the end of the day, accredited investors, high net worth individuals, you know, they have to deploy their money, right? Like, otherwise they're not going to earn any yield, any return on it. And so they need operators like us. They need the people that really have the vision and to deploy it with and multiply their, you know, their funds for their family. So at the end of the day, I think, you know, we're offering valuable, like, propositions there on, you know, building communities, improving, you know, urban spaces, that at the end of the day is kind of a win-win. So I believe, you know, in order to raise capital successfully, do a deal successfully, it needs to be a win-win.
So is every developer that's doing small, medium-sized development in the metro thinking about this higher level of societal fabric and, like, balanced value both to end user customer and investor? Is everybody doing this? Because this doesn't seem like a common conversation.
I believe Nashville developers are doing a great job with it. I do believe so. I mean, I think it's overall a pretty tight community. I've met really great developers here in town. Also some other guys coming in from outside. I think that's something that's been sort of the magic around Nashville, that, you know, people move to Nashville because they all kind of share, like, that commonality to do something bigger, to improve and have impact. And so that's what I love and love about Nashville. That's, I think, what also draws a lot of people to Nashville. Just had a conversation actually earlier this afternoon because I kind of got that question, you know, why Nashville? And I think that's a really big differentiator compared to other places because, you know, in New York, a lot of people are just about themselves. I don't think you really have that necessarily in Nashville to that extreme.
Yeah, it is an interesting balanced culture where there's a real connectivity and a social fabric because it's kind of born out of that Southern culture. But it's way more metropolitan than it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And so there is more of a hustle culture. And so somehow these things have really blended into an interesting landscape, most definitely. So I think a piece of this larger puzzle as I'm working it out is got to be the visibility of a developer in the larger sort of real estate landscape, as opposed to say, I don't know, 50 years ago or more. You know, I think the developer of yesteryear was sort of this cloistered in an office, sort of big wig, probably some white man, you know, kind of a thing. And there may have even been some sort of good old boy quality to that where, you know, everybody's sort of scratching everybody's back behind closed doors. But I think what you're driving at is that there is a visibility now where you've got to be on social media and the world is wanting more transparency out of you. And so you certainly represent something different than some of the developers I've interacted with in the past, an openness, a more social awareness, even sort of like managing your brand, you know, from what the product that Sapphire is developing. So help me understand more of kind of how you've gotten to where you are.
Yeah, I believe that, you know, there's definitely been a tremendous change and like push from the baby boomer generation to now millennials to now Gen Z, right? And I'm even seeing this like as a millennial, seeing how now really young guys that are like more Gen Z pushing sort of their development businesses. And I love what I'm seeing. I think it's just so inspiring. Because they're changing their families' lives, right? And they're just setting a whole nother trajectory for others to come after. So I think that within the baby boomer generation, that it wasn't probably really common to share and pass knowledge down to others to learn development, right? Like, and we're talking here about realtors, we're talking about wholesalers, you know, other real estate professionals, right? Like, I don't think there was really that interest of, like, you know, why teach a realtor to learn how to develop? They're great at selling homes. They're great at, you know, bringing buyers. Mm. And I think that has changed. You know, I believe in more collaborative approach because at the end of the day, I think we're stronger together. Mm. And I think now for the next 5 to 10 years, I believe that the next like sort of also currency is really attention in the sense of like, building community and sharing, passing on what you know to make someone else better. Because especially after COVID too, right? I think we all want to feel community and it's more fun to do it together. I love the realtor events we have, the Brokers Open, and seeing also how they interact with our product, getting feedback. Like at the end of the day, I think when we develop now, especially like luxury homes, you know, or like townhomes, having that access to instant feedback from realtors is so valuable, and having a brand, having, you know, like sort of that social media outlet, it helps like just evolving and learning so much faster. So I think it's only making us better as developers, you know, to A, put up better products that really people want, and B, also like, you know, to then sell it more effectively. So I think there's just that generational like sort of shift from generation to generation.
Yeah, I don't think it's just generational. I think we're going through an evolution generally in the grander world of real estate. You don't have to look very far beyond the news and the lawsuits and all the stuff going on out there to see that the general public is wanting to interact with trades professionals, real estate professionals, you know, everyone in a different, more transparent, simpler fashion. We have a lot of technology that's being leveraged now. Mm-hmm. People are just more aware of kind of everything, to your point, in social media. And so I think that in some ways, this is sort of a charge to the realtor out there to say, hey, you know, as you're continuing to evolve as a professional, make sure that you're not neglecting these adjacent skill sets and information and knowledge so that you can continue to build value within your own business.
Absolutely. I think, so I'm going to add to this because I think that, you know, as a realtor, you understanding, learning like zoning, understanding urban planning only makes you better, even if you don't necessarily want to develop. But even if you want, for example, more investor clients, or you want to speak more intelligently about what's happening, like, or what the max use of a property is, you actually just have only benefits by learning at least the basic understanding there of development, right? And to your point, in terms of like that shift to more transparency, I think, you know, now it's the same as like in the pharmaceutical or like in the medical field where people self-diagnosing, you know, what they have, right? I think it's the same in real estate. People look on Zillow and see what the property is worth and think that's it, right? So we have to, overall, as real estate professionals, right? Like whether developer, realtor, investor, wholesaler, you name it, we all have to understand that like we have to bring a lot more value to the table in terms of customer service and the knowledge that we have, that we've gained through experience and like really like striving to learn more and dive deeper. I think it's value. And that starts, you know, for a realtor and like customer service and ends probably in really some more technical, you know how niches like development. But at the end of the day, I think there's just such a benefit to being more like well-rounded on that end.
But let's get away from the touchy-feely of well-rounded and get right down to numbers. Because at the end of the day, I think you're hinting at a pipeline that you're creating for yourself. There's a lot of conversation out in the world in real estate about leads and like, where are you getting your leads and like, how are you farming your sphere to create leads and all this kind of stuff. And the truth is, could be said that nobody kind of makes leads out of nothing. You don't just go poof, there's a lead. And yet almost in development, there is a bit of like poof, there's a lead out of nothing, because instead of conveying a product and effectively your whole focus is the people who are going from buyer to seller or whatever, you're now creating a product instead of simply conveying one. And so the leads kind of begin to pop up out of nowhere, so to speak. You're creating new people in your sphere out of what would have been strangers, because they're coming and viewing your product, or they're maybe buying your product, or maybe they're later selling your product. So, I mean, there's definitely a way to truly actually generate leads out of nothing, whereas in traditional real estate, buying and selling agent, no, that's not possible.
No, I mean, that's a lot of what we kind of preach is like, you know, I mean, I got my license, my realtor license, just way later because... I mean, initially, like, first of all, it wasn't really necessary, but then also, you know, there was this benefit to kind of like also list our own properties, especially like on the really true residential end, right? Like now, as we're growing into like larger deals, it's a little bit different too. But I mean, we work with a lot of other realtors too, right? Like we love to collaborate. So, I mean, you know, again, like Katie Morrell, Deborah Volley, like love those ladies. We have such a strong network here, and I think it's important, you know. But certainly, like as a developer, you know, you kind of have leads popping up left and right because people see the building process too, right? So like you buy land and you can put your sign in the yard, right? And now you have 9 months, 12 months, and you get all that traffic, right? And people calling in, oh, what's happening over here? The neighbor's like, oh, you know, what's happening over there? And as long as you're really present and you network and you make an effort, you meet a lot of people just naturally, right? And then later on to what you also refer to is then, you know, the brokers open, or, you know, the actually finished product type interaction. So you just have a lot more visibility that way, right? So obviously now, like listing our own product, is already, you know, it's definitely a significant volume. And then we still have also the investors that we work with, you know, that are looking then for property, or like buy or sell both ways, right?
Right.
And so, again, I think like as a realtor, you're actually absolutely best position to learn how to develop and do your own projects.
This is lovely, because We have but to look no further than the traditional sort of business industries to borrow their ideas and bring them to real estate, because we're talking about visibility. We're talking about branding. We're talking about an extension of people's everyday awareness of you. And here's the cold hard facts, folks. Real estate becomes an accidental game of roulette a lot of the time, because if you're not top of mind at the moment where that person over there is wanting to buy or sell, and that other person that they barely know is top of mind, they're going to use them. The repeat business in real estate percentages we know is poor. And so how better then to be top of mind than by literally simply having more impressions, more brand awareness? If you are touching more things, doing more things, or your process is longer, or people are coming to you in different avenues, the number of leads, the number of opportunities, and really just the number of moments for you to be top of mind just goes way up, almost exponentially. It's not even like linearly up. And so this is a great reminder that if we simply look at, well, how often can I interact with my potential sphere or my leads out there? You know, that's a better chance for me to be doing business with them on a variety of fronts. Give yourself the Swiss Army knife opportunity to be working with you at all these different things. It's a bit of a vertical integration. We've talked about that here on this podcast in the past, that if you jam more skills and knowledge into yourself as a business person, you give yourself a better opportunity to monetize along the way, as well as for people to enter into your larger whole from different avenues. And so, yeah, this is a good reminder that development is not like a cousin to real estate. It is real estate, and it's as much of an overlap to the traditional buyer and seller agents out there as they want.
No, I mean, I think you put it very well together.
We've laid down all these charges and challenges for people. So let's give them the facts so they know what to do and where to go. First of all, you got to find Sapphire Development and Josephine Safford on social media, on Instagram, and follow her. But tell us a little bit more about Developer Academy, where our listeners here, who may be from all around the country, can check out some of the stuff that you're offering to better themselves as business people.
Sure. Yeah. So I basically created a full month program in which we really teach you from A to C everything that you need to know about real estate development. So my goal is to get you really fully comfortable with doing your first project, and preferably without any cash of your own. So I basically pass on everything that I've learned in this program. And it's really nationwide. I mean, we have also a member Houston, Texas. So it's not just Tennessee. The crux is the same. And what I also offer is ask people from out of town, like out of Davidson County, join to jump into their county with them. So zoning planning basically there is more tailored for them. Again, love to learn as well. Want to make sure it translates. But again, I believe that as a realtor, you know, you're best positioned to learn real estate development and build your own pipeline than for upcoming listings. And I think, you know, making $1 million as a realtor is pretty difficult unless you manage a full team. And, you know, you can do that as a developer much more easier. And then at some point you get to the point where you probably have $500,000 of just commissions alone that you're producing, and you don't need a big massive team for that.
Amazing. All right. Well, check out Developer Academy. Hit subscribe, stay with us. We're going to continue to bring you great stories from folks like Josephine, who are intersecting the world of real estate and the entrepreneurship and the business behind it. I'm Michael Conrad. Thanks for being with us, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you, Michael.
Hey, everyone. Jake again, director for the Business of Homes podcast. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. A huge thank you to Josephine Safford for being a part of the podcast. Go follow her on Instagram at Josephine Safford and let her know how much you enjoyed their story. Don't forget to subscribe on your preferred listening platform and make sure to follow us on Instagram as well at The Business of Homes Pod. Do you have any feedback or want to suggest someone for the show? Email us at thebusinessofhomespodcast@gmail.com. Thank you again for listening, and we'll see you soon.